Hi, welcome to Saturday Supercast, Episode 6. As we get ready to launch the anthology proper, Hoover decided to stop by the show to talk for a little bit about the ideas behind sugary cereals. This is the last freeform show, I promise.
Head for sugary cereals,
how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine.
Wow, you sound like you're really doing fine.
That's my radio voice.
So, what do you want to talk about today?
Let's talk about apple pie. No, let's not talk about apple pie. What do you want to talk about?
I thought we'd like let people eavesdrop on what our normal telephone conversations sound like. Because, of course, that would be so thrilling, right?
Oh, no. Now they're going to hear all my private desires.
Which are what?
Which are more comic books, more ICs, and more toys.
And more girls with cat glasses.
Well,
hey,
yeah.
I had a dream about the Mighty Orbots the other night. And I woke up.
You and no one else.
Oh, that can't be true. But I woke up in the best mood ever. And I think I know what caused this dream to happen. Is I had, just before bed, I spent an hour visiting Sean Robert's Branded in the 80s website. And I was
That's a good website.
That's a great website. And this sounds like an ad, but it's not. although I encourage people to go there. He did this, one of his recent posts was a summary of the first episode of Galaxy High.
Yeah.
It was a great, great post, although I took issue with a couple things. I'm going to have to call him out on it.
Uh-oh.
Well, let me just say that this isn't what the issue I had with it. I do need to point out that it's not necessarily – parents, you know, read with your kids. There's a couple of things that Sean points out that maybe you don't want a little kid looking at. But do you know what I'm talking about, Hoof? Did you read the post?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Okay.
Of course.
But that's not what I had issue with. What I had issue with was just his what he found so disturbing about it. Because I watched it not too long ago, and I didn't find it to be that disconcerting. You know, the rapid storytelling and the overuse of yellow and purple. That just felt very 1980s to me.
Yeah, I loved that show as a kid, but I don't think I could go back and watch it now and feel the same things that I felt, unlike a lot of 80s cartoons.
I don't know. I thought it was pretty okay.
Well.
Where were we going? Oh, I was going to come up with a really awful segue. As I say, you know what I like best about Galaxy High is that it had a lot of morality content in it. Let's talk about morality content.
I just want to hear more about the Orbots.
Mighty Orbots? When was the last time you watched that show?
When it aired.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, it was, I think I saw it back in, like, 98. I got a VHS copy and watched it. It was, like, one episode.
I remember next to nothing about it.
Well, I mean, it was very goofy. It was a very silly show. I mean, it was like the CBS people, or whoever it was, whatever network owned Mighty Orbots, kind of took the giant robot, the Voltron motif, and kind of squeezed it into American cartoon storytelling style. So the robots were all very like they were stretchy and Looney Tunes-esque in the way they were drawn. They looked more like people. Yet they would convert to a giant robot. But it was neat to the extent that the characters were all really – they really all were very vibrant and stood apart. There was Bort, the goofy kind of Don Knotts kind of character who was a shape changer. He could, like, transform into just about any shape he needed to. And you had Tor, who was, like, the big, strong guy who acted like Zaf Brannigan from Futurama. And then you had Crunch, which made no sense because he was this big, overweight robot who loved to eat metal. He looked like a Sharktacon.
I vaguely remember him.
And then you had Bo and Boo, who were like two girl robots, and I don't remember what their deal was. I think they could do something with holograms, or now I don't remember. But in the episode I saw, it was like totally the premise of Cold Slither. the bad guys formed a rock band, and the good girl robots were like entranced by these guys. I thought they were just the best, and so they went to go see them, and it turns out that their music was, oh, it was hypnotic or something like that to like poison children's minds, and then the good guys had to fight them. But the bad guy from the show was interesting because it was this creature at the heart of a star or a planet or something named Umbra. It was just like this blobulous creature that talked like Dr. Claw. So that was like part of the idea that I borrowed for Silver and the Periodic Forces with the character of Burgil, just like this giant blobular creature that doesn't do anything except tell its cronies to go out and make trouble.
Yeah, my only memory really of that show is seeing like like at 7 at night. What do they call that? Television time?
Prime time.
There's like a prime time special of all the upcoming cartoons and talking a little bit about them. And every time they said Orbots, I was like, are they saying GoBots? Because there wasn't a GoBots cartoon yet, to my knowledge. And I would just see these flashing images of robots and them saying something that sounded vaguely like GoBots. And I was like, are they saying GoBots? And I'm intrigued. But didn't turn out to be GoBots. But that's okay, because GoBots got a cartoon, and it was not any good.
You know, that's something we need to go back and revisit, though. I bet you it would be watchable nowadays.
Possibly. I mean, I haven't seen it in, again, well... That one I think I saw in the 90s. I think they showed it on Cartoon Network or something. I remember seeing episodes of that, at least pieces of them, so I would be willing to revisit that one. But not on DVD as of yet.
No. The thing I'm noticing as I get a little older, and you know, I always have to qualify this, I know I'm not old, but I'm older than I was, right? How does that song go, Hoover? You're older than you've ever been.
And now you're getting older.
Yeah. The thing I'm noticing is when I was in my 20s and I was feeling nostalgia for this stuff, I was all like, oh, Transformers the movie was the best because like characters got blown up. And that's like, oh, they were really pushing the envelope, right? And, you know, you really look for the best episodes to focus on. Like, for instance, Call of the Primitives, the Transformers episode, because it had such great animation.
Yeah.
And you look at episodes like Burden Hardest to Bear, because the writing was particularly okay in that one. But then you sneer at episodes like, was it The Most Dangerous Game? The one where that guy was hunting Optimus Prime?
Yeah. And then there was City of Steel, where Megatron has to... build a city and uses Optimus Prime's arm as a cannon on the top of the building and turns Optimus Prime into an alligator-con.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right, and so like, when we were in our 20s, and let's call that the Adult Swim age, where Adult Swim is like really, really cool. That was annoying. You talk about episodes like City of Steel, and you're like, oh, jeez. Or you talk about, say, you know, the Insecticons, and you're like, oh, why did Shrapnel have to do that stupid repeating thing all the time? It was so annoying. But you look at it, and as I get a little bit older, I'm a little bit more forgiving, and I even find some of that stuff charming, where I remember that, oh, wait, this stuff was for kids. So, yeah, some of it's going to be a little silly. Some of it's going to be a little inexplicable. But when you're a little kid, you don't care. You know, you thought it was interesting that Optimus' body got turned into an alligator when you were a little kid. I distinctly remember having a conversation with another kid at school, and I don't remember which kid it was, but I remember we were talking about Transformers. This is when Season 1 was first happening, and we had just seen the previous Saturday morning the episode, is it SOS Dinobots, where Grimlock, Slag, and Sludge turn on Optimus Prime, and then they have to create Swoop and Snarl. And, you know, it has that big scene where, you know, all the Dinobots fire on Optimus and he falls into that pit and Grimlock says, Grimlock takes Optimus to Megatron. He's, like, working with Megatron, but not exactly. And I distinctly remember having a conversation at school the following week where we were talking about that episode, how exciting it was. And a kid says to me, oh, Grimlock's my favorite Dinobot because he's so dumb. Now... Looking back, Grimlock isn't exactly a dumb character. He talks dumb. He talks like a caveman, but he's not a dumb character. He's just a slower character. But he's not like, duh, I'm a dummy. You know, it's not like that. But when you're a kid, that's all you're getting out of it, right? Or at least that's what that kid I was talking to. All he was really parsing from that was, he's dumb. So
yeah, that was enough to assign which character was your favorite back then. It was, you know, when you were a kid, it's like, oh, I like him because he's blue. I like him because he's a tape player. You know, that's all you needed. You didn't need like, oh, I like him because of his undying loyalty to Megatron and how he has a sort of paternal aspect towards the cassette tape. You know, you're not saying that when you're seven.
Right, you're not saying like, oh, you know what I admire about him is his sense of perseverance and his stick-to-itiveness. He has a really strict code of honor, and I admire that in a character. You're not thinking that. Now, maybe that's registering in a certain intuitive degree, but for the most part, what you can verbalize is he's the dumb guy, he's the smart guy, whatever. So my point is that when I look back at him now, whenever something kind of especially silly happens, I find it – I'm not as angry about it, and I feel a lot more forgiving towards it. So I have a feeling that if I watch GoBots, I'm going to find a lot more entertainment in it than I did, say, when I was in my 20s, and I was, you know, kind of thumbing my nose at it.
And you were like, everything's lame.
This is like we're like 2021, when you're on that tail end of the teen years.
Maybe. I would like to put in GoBots and see what the deal is and give it a whirl. But it is a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, so
it can't be
held up to the high Sunbow standards.
Well, you know, I just think back on my chief complaints about it, and they were the characters didn't use guns. Like, oh, it makes so much more sense for a Transformer to use a gun. Why does that make more sense? Because you know how the GoBots, they fired lasers out of their fists. They just hold up their arms and lasers would come out. I think what
to me,
I was
that
trying...
almost makes more sense than a robot having to use a gun.
Yeah.
Because if a robot can transform into a whole other shape, why does it need some little handheld gun, you know?
And there's a specific line, here's nerd alert, a specific line where Blue Streak, and this is, I think, from City of Steel, where Rumble is coming at Blue Streak, Bumblebee, and Prowl in a subway. Remember that? He's like, he's driving the subway at them.
Yes.
And Blue Streak shoots at the subway again and again and again. The subway blows up. And Blue Streak says, whoo, that thing blew just in time. One more bolt and I would have been too pooped to zap. Which means the energy from the gun comes from his body, right? I mean, that's the implication.
Maybe.
So why use the gun? Why is that intermediary? Why did I just have it come out of his hands? I don't get it. So, and I'm sure that, you know, any Transformers fan from the various Transformers news groups could come in here and explain to me why that is.
Well, you see, the gun comes from subspace, and subspace channels the energy.
And by the way, Unicron would win in the fight between Unicron and Death Star. But anyway, you know, it's like I think about my issues with GoBots in the past, and they were all so Star Trek level nerddom that I think that if I were to watch it now, I would just look at it from the standpoint of, oh, this was just a kid's show, and there's stuff in there for us too, and we just appreciate what we get. Especially when you compare, say, GoBots to Beast Wars, which there's a lot of comparisons, I think.
Wow, that's a bold statement.
Well, okay, compare Leader One to Optimus Primal and Psykill to Beast Wars Megatron. There's a lot of character crossover there. I mean, the whole reason I didn't like Leader One compared to Optimus Prime was Leader One sounded like a younger guy. He was more of a field commander kind of general type, whereas Optimus was more like this wizened, you know, older figure. Seemed more like the kind of guy who could impart wisdom onto you, whereas Leader One was the kind of guy who was like, hey, you know, Turbo, get back here, knock it off, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Psykill was, compared to, say, Gen 1 Megatron, was much more vampiric. You know, he was like, he had that rich kind of, oh, hello, Crusher, kind of attitude. Right?
Mm-hmm. I remember one of your very first comments on hearing the Beast Wars Megatron voice is that you said he sounded like Psykill.
Yep, and he totally does. There's a lot of comparison that can be made there. The fact that women characters were introduced from almost from the get-go in Beast Wars, same with GoBots, whereas with the Transformers Gen 1 series, it was, what, like a whole season before we got any female Autobots? And then like, they show up in one episode and kind of go away again? Well, time for us to go back underground. No girls allowed.
We've already hooked the female viewership now, so let's just disappear again.
Whereas, you know, one of the main characters in GoBots was a girl, and she was a bad guy, which is the same in Beastars. Coincidence?
Ooh, things are starting to get a little eerie.
So, how did we get down this tributary? We were going to talk about something else, I think, but somehow talking about Transformers always.
You had to talk about Orbots, which led us to GoBots, which led us to Beastars.
Welcome to the Stream of Consciousness episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, Transformers, they're great.
And now you see what Jersey and I talk about all the time. All roads lead back to Transformers, always.
Well, I was telling Mark on the Art and Story podcast that I'm going to make it a point. I'm going to make a point to start bringing Beast Wars into more conversations. Not only because I'm a big Beast Wars nerd, but because it's something that, well, you spend more time on the Transformers news groups, don't you? Or at least on, like, the news sites. Does Beast Wars get as much coverage as the other generations, iterations of Transformers?
No, I think now that it's, you know, been away for a while, it's sort of receded to a level that's not talked about all that often, but certainly more so than other aspects of the show. I mean, Generation 1 is always going to be king in that respect, and now that apparently there was a Transformers movie this year, I hear, didn't see it, so I don't know anything about it, but people are talking about that a lot, so Beast Wars is sort of on the back burner.
Is the movie approaching a level where it might be considered canon?
No, it's just a separate issue. But it's, you know, let's hope not. But I don't think anything will ever really eclipse Generation 1, because that's what brought us to the dance, as they say.
Well,
for the most part.
When we're dead, then it's over.
Yes, then they'll talk about how great Robots in Disguise was. And you'll be like, why can't I be here for this conversation?
Yes, Robots in Disguise, there was a great iteration of the Transformers franchise.
That was a very entertaining, somewhat odd twist on Transformerdom. But that needs to be on DVD in Region 1 format, because I can't find the Region 2 releases.
Oh.
And that is a crime against DVD watchers such as you and I.
Yeah. That would be something that would get my money instantly if they put that on a DVD in the States. For those of you who haven't watched it, I bet there you can find it on YouTube. You can find episodes.
I'm sure there are episodes there. But the interesting thing about Robots in Disguise, just to touch on this briefly, for those of you who don't know, this was the show that came out in 2001. It is an import of Transformers Car Robots, which is the name of that. That's what they called it. I wasn't consulted in the naming. It's like, these cars transform into robots. What do we call it? Our robots? Sold.
Brilliant, Johnson. You get a promotion.
Yes. I don't know what they were thinking about in Japan when they named it, but that's what it was called.
Yeah.
So they brought it over here, and it was called Transformers Robots in Disguise. So most nerdlings such as ourselves refer to Robots in Disguise, or R.I.D. Anyway, the interesting thing about this show is that it had a lot of slapstick elements, which you'd think, slapstick and Transformers, that sounds retarded.
Yeah.
It does kind of sound retarded until you experience it, and then it's just sort of fun and funny. You had times when the Decepticons were pretending to be good and they were cleaning up a park. You got to see Decepticons sweeping with brooms, I believe.
And then they're doing like what is it? They're doing traffic.
Yes, like the traffic cops. They're directing traffic.
And like a guy speeds past Scourge, and he runs up to him and says, "You must obey the traffic laws. You might get hurt." And he waves his sword at the guy.
Yes. Just a lot of funny little silly moments, but it also had a sort of underlying serious storyline as well. It had a lot of negative aspects I thought that I didn't like. I didn't like the little holographic Thai girl that the Autobots talked to. I didn't care for that. But it had enough cool elements and fun elements for me to latch on to. And same for you. And I think there's a very small cult of Transformer fans that really liked that show. But again, that show was, you know, over 5 years ago.
Oh, wow, that's hard to believe.
Yeah. It's sort of not really bandied about much in conversation anymore. And not on DVD in Region 1.
And Robots in Disguise, if nothing else, introduced us to one of the best evil characters in the Transformers. Would it be called a mythos?
Yeah, I would definitely call it a mythos.
In the form of Skybite, who I think it was... Neil Kaplan, who said that the trick to his character is he's like a Shakespearean actor who's forced to play second banana, and that is like, I mean, in a way he's kind of cut from the same cloth as the, say, like the Brigadier General, Cobra Commander kind of, well, season 3 G.I. Joe Cobra Commander kind of character, where he wants to be the most wicked, ruthless, evil guy of all time, but he just, a pie always hits him in the face.
Yeah.
And to come back to that idea of the key to that kind of character is it's always fun to humiliate a guy with dignity. Skybite is that guy. I mean, he sees himself as a poet. He speaks very richly, and then, you know, a cinder block falls on his head.
Yeah, literally, these are the kind of things that would happen.
Yeah, and then you've got like his cronies are Slapper, Gasgunk, and Darkscream, who are like literally the Three Stooges. They're just three morons who. Just begrudgingly obey Skybite. And then the whole thing is Skybite, all he wants out of life is to please Megatron, to make Megatron happy. And in his efforts to do so, he just keeps making Megatron more and more angry.
I'm laughing already.
Episode 16, The Fish Test, is the perfect episode for that. That was like that was the formula down to a T, where it was Skybite. He takes a online personality test one morning, and it says it's a fish personality test, right? Like, remember back in the early 2000s when like everybody took a which Hobbit are you test, which Star Wars character are you test, which flower are you test, and he took which fish are you, and it said that he's a jellyfish. So the whole episode's by him trying to prove that he's not a jellyfish, and every time he does it, things just get worse and worse for him.
Keep in mind here, this is a Transformer sitting at a computer taking a test about his personality. This is going to be the kind of show that you either really appreciate or you will really want to run from it.
Yeah.
If you take your Transformers very seriously, if you only go to Transformers for big arcing drama and big laser fights and everything, then you probably won't like Robots in Disguise. But if you have a bit of a bizarre, silly streak in you, and you can take your Transformers who turn into sharks sitting at a computer and taking personality tests and being upset with the results, then maybe you would like this show. But anyway.
And what's more is when he turns into a shark, he doesn't have to be in the water. He flies.
Yeah.
And that makes no sense whatsoever. He flies around in shark mode, which on the surface sounds so ridiculous, but it's so brilliant because the way they handle it. And then there's that wonderful scene in that same episode where he's finally succumbed to despair, and he's sitting on this rock by the waterside. He's like on the beach, but he's like on this high precipice, and he's like in shark mode, and he's sitting as a shark on like the ledge, and he says, "Alas, so the predictions are true. I'm a jellyfish." Peter Spellos was the voice actor, and my God, he should have won an Emmy for that role.
That was good stuff. Good times.
Very, very good show. It was such a welcome relief after what happened post Beast Wars, because we had Beast Wars and we had Beast Machines, which, you know, wasn't so good.
Yeah, that was sort of like the height of the drama. In Beast
yes.
Machines, everything was important and dark
yes.
and scary and brooding. So to come off of that and then go into Robots in Disguise, you had to really shift gears in your mind. But once you did, good stuff.
Yeah. And then it went very quickly.
And it disappeared because it was one season, and that
yeah.
was that.
Yeah. So that's all we're asking for, whoever owns the rights to that show. Just one season. It's what, 20, 28 episodes, 26 episodes, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's 20-something. Just bring out a box of all of it. Boom. You know, I would be happy to get the import version, but I can't find it. So, come on, bring it.
That ends our little Transformers tributary.
And this just goes to show you how any time Jersey and I get on the phone, we can be like, hey, how are you doing? Oh, I'm doing fine. What are you doing? Oh, I'm drinking some milk. You know, this milk reminds me of the color of Prowl, who was a Generation 1 Autobot.
And you know what was interesting about Prowl was the way Simon Furman played him up in the comic series, how he was kind of the antithesis of Grimlock. And those two were always at each other's throats. It was so interesting the way he played those two against each other. Prowl was the stickler for the rules, and he was really uptight and wanted to do what Prime would have done, while Grimlock was a freewheeler and always followed his own star, which made Prime name him leader.
This is how we roll, kids. It's a little scary.
Nerd! Hello, nerd!
That's us. Yeah.
You know, I was talking with my wife the other day about that, about how...
Oh, I love how you just name-dropped that. I was talking with my wife. Yes, I'm a nerd. Oh, but I'm married, too.
That's pretty much what I was driving at. You hit it. But...
No, you don't even have to finish that sentence. I was talking with my wife the other day.
No,
was just to point out that I had a wife to talk to.
All right. Are you done? Now I'm going to show you what I was really driving at here. I was talking to her about how, remember a couple weeks back when we had that phone conversation, and it started out literally like, oh, how you doing, oh, you know what I was thinking about the Decepticon jets, and we talked for I think 2.5 hours about the histories of
yeah.
the Decepticon jets and what I would
yep.
do if we did a comic series about the Decepticon jets, which we're not going to tell you, dear reader, because there
no.
is a chance that someday we may get a chance to do that, and if it happens, that conversation is the outline of what we would do for a Decepticon Jet miniseries. So tell your local retailer, Call Devil's Due or IDW, whoever owns the rights now, to hire us to do it, because it would be great.
Because you will open up the comic and it will say, written by two giant nerds.
I was telling my wife, I said, you know, it's amazing how long we've known each other for, what, 13, 14 years, something like that.
Oh, man, math is hard.
And yet we have never run out of fuel when it comes to talk. We've never run out of energon.
Totally true. Oh, God. Oh man, you said it, not me.
Yeah, here, I slapped myself on the hand. But we never run out of fuel about talking about this subject. And so, and she says to me, and like I'm telling her this, like I'm confessing. You know, forgive me, for I've sinned. I've just spent another 3 hours talking about Transformers. And she turns to me and she says, you know, I really wish I had a friend like that where I could just talk about the same thing and never get tired about it with them. So there you have it. We're nerds, but there's one person in this world who envies what we've got, what you and I got, buddy.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah.
You know, saying oh, shucks like that reminds me of a 57-year Ironhide who could turn into a red man.
He's in the movie, isn't he?
Yes.
I don't
well,
think Peter Cullen
someone
plays
with
him,
his name is in the movie, and no, Peter Cullen does not play him.
Yeah, I guess that would be considered kind of hammy by today's movie standards, where everything's all CSI'd out, and everybody talks in really short, choppy sentences. It's like, it's almost like a bad parody of Dragnet, where it's like, no, it's not. What's that? It's over there. Dun dun.
Now, we're not making fun of Dragnet, because you guys should know that Jersey and I both love Dragnet to a rather absurd degree.
Well, you more than me.
Yeah. But your wife loves Dragon Air. You want to mention again to the folks at home that you have a wife?
Well, just so the listeners know, I got married, and I have a wife, and she's very pretty and crazy about each other. Which means that I you know, I'm not going to die alone. And
and by default, we see that what this means for Hoover is that he will die alone, and he doesn't have a wife, and that no one cares about him, except Jersey sometimes talks to him about Transformers.
I distinctly remember having a conversation with you before this recording where we said, let's keep it happy. Let's not say things that would make kids go, I don't like the Supercast anymore. Make me sad.
Boy, just that image of a kid sitting at his computer listening to this is kind of fearsome enough.
Oh, nobody listens to this. That's why I invited you just to do a free form with me.
Oh, okay.
We're just padding right now.
Woo!
So, besides cartoons, is there anything else that you like that we could use as fuel for your fodder?
You know what I like, and thanks for bringing up my fodder. You know what I like is the fact that a lot of cartoons we grew up watching, they have a sort of moral and good aspect to them.
You want to talk about that?
That isn't necessarily prevalent in a lot of cartoons made today.
Okay, well, I should warn you that this is something that we broached on our previous Saturday Supercast. I think this might be an episode or two back.
You've been broaching topics with other people?
You homewrecker! But, you know, I'd love to get your input on that, let you weigh in and see how you feel about telling good stories for kids.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it sounds a little silly to put it in a sentence like this, but morality is good stuff. Sort of by definition.
Well, you know, actually, I'm really glad you brought this up, because I was having thoughts after we did the recording about that. And the word morality is so loaded. It's such a word that it can easily be misconstrued as to having, like nobody wants to hang out with a guy who has a moral agenda, right? Like,
yeah.
to go back to Dragnet, Joe Friday doesn't have a moral agenda. He's not there to tell you how to feel about things. He's just there to uphold the law,
yeah.
Right? And what does he always say about the law? If you don't like them, change them, but don't break them, you know? I don't profess to have a certain, like, moral agenda to push on people. Like, I'm, like, some kind of, like, cult leader. Like, oh, this is the way you should feel about life, kids. But maybe the key here is to spell out as not pushing anything harmful, right? It's not so much about pro-social as the absence of being antisocial.
Yeah.
And possibly, I mean, I think by default, if you remove the antisocial aspect, then what fills the void is pro-social. But I would say I would just be careful to kind of couch it in a sense of we're not out to indoctrinate, we're not out to, you know, shape the minds of the future of children. Because like, people, and I'm only careful about this because people tend to think of children as having these like little spongy minds that all you have to do is say, you know, don't go to school, take drugs, grow your hair long, and they'll just do it, you know. I just feel that it's necessary to be careful about that. So, like, when you look at things like what I did on, you could say Silver and the Periodic Force is number one, which you can go read, kids, at mlatcomics.com, and there's an image there, it says Silver and the Periodic Forces. Click that, and you can go to that issue. And, like, in it, like, the whole moral thing, if you want to call it that, is don't be too uptight. You know, it's pretty vague.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let go every once in a while and act on instinct or something like that, something really vague. So it's not so much like, as Mark describes He-Man episodes, Mark Rudolph, he describes He-Man episodes as like distilled Bible stories. and I mean, from his standpoint, I'm sure that is how they feel, you know. So, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it just seems like that, you know, there's a natural tendency to look up to the people, you know, be they fictional or whatever, that we see on the screen, and by the screen I mean the movie screen or the television screen. And that's sort of always been a part of the human experience, that, you know, we would see this movie and we would root for the hero and whatnot. And because we would root for the hero, we would want to make ourselves more like the hero in a lot of cases. And so a lot of times, you know, on the screen, there would be this character that we would sort of look up to. And if he was written well, you know, we would really start to appreciate this character and emulate him. So since it would be almost counterproductive to society to look up to characters who had more of an antisocial message than a pro-social message, it would only make sense that most of the characters were more of a, at least the ones that were painted in a good light, were more pro-social oriented. So, basically, after I put everyone to sleep there, I just think that there's a reason, and there's a good reason, that, you know, people on TV shows and movies and whatnot should be heroic, and they should give us something to live up to, rather than I'm not against bleak, dark stories in any sense of the word, but it's good to have, to see larger than life characters that you can go, oh, I really admire what that character does, and I want to be more like him. You know, I think we should always strive, just as, you know, as people, as humanity, to be better than we are. And to see examples of people who are better than we are, I think, is very helpful. I mean, and this show gets picked on a lot, but if all entertainment in the world was just Jerry Springer, you know, what would we have to look up to? You know, what if we just saw a whole bunch of people who had, you know, no morals and did whatever they wanted and all that, you know, where's the goal? You know, where is the viewers looking up to some sort of ideal and trying to better ourselves? I just think that, you know, entertainment doesn't necessarily have to have that. But when it does, it's just sort of like an added bonus. And most of the cartoons that we grew up on in the 80s, because of different laws and whatnot, and different like censorship boards and all that, you know, they were very interested in promoting pro-social messages in those kind of cartoons. So some of them did it very... They took different paths to go down that road. You know, you had G.I. Joe, where it would basically have a moral at the end, and He-Man did the same thing, where it's like, oh, I broke a window with my baseball, what should I do? Well, you know, real-life situations that kids could identify with. Or some other shows just had it sort of naturally incorporated into the flow of the show. You know, they all went different routes with it, but regardless, there seemed to be more shows back then when we were growing up with stuff to sort of latch on to and pattern our actions after than today. I think there's more diversity of, I guess, focus of shows today, which, you know, in a way is good. But I also feel that something is sort of lost when you watch something for a half hour and there's really nothing to latch on to. When it becomes a little bit more mindless, then that's when I guess that's when I start to get a little disinterested, but that's just me personally.
Well, yeah, we charted a little bit of this in the last episode of the Supercast, episode 5. We did, Sean and me and Mark Rudolph did this. We kind of talked about, like, from the 60s to the 80s, how the whole the censorship that happened in, well, not censorship so much, but it was like there were parent groups who were fighting about cartoon content in the 70s and took all the violence out. And then, and that had like a very powerful effect on what happened in the 80s, where, yeah, it became more violent, more action oriented, but they were very careful to instill some kind of, like, quote-unquote value into it so that parents had less to argue about. You know, so that even after you watch Flint beat the tar out of a bunch of guys in the previous half hour, at the end he's saying, hey, don't spray paint on that wall.
That's nice. Exactly.
So, no, I think you're right. I think that it's important to kind of encapsulate it that way, to say, like, look, you know, this is just one kind. This is an important kind, because I think that's a very nice thing to think about. So we should try to be better than we are. Of course we should. And that's like saying be nice to people and don't tell lies. But just like be nice to people and don't tell lies, it becomes a platitude. And when something starts to sound like a platitude, we tend to kind of write it off as it just being like sugary nonsense. You know, it's like, oh, who cares? That's a nice thing in theory, but in the real world, meh. But, you know, I also want to point out that I recently, the last couple of years, started reading things like Kafka. And one of the things that I found about it is like, I was reading The Trial, which is like all about being a victim. And that's like the antithesis of everything that I like in my fiction. You know, I like stories about empowerment and, like, you know, when the chips are down, you get back up, you just keep going, you know, and that's like what The Front was all about, right? And The Trial is all about, like, just not having any control over your life, and this powerful force called the government or whoever it is. It's just these guys in suits come and just start mucking with this guy's life. And there was a strange kind of catharsis in just experiencing the terror of helplessness through this character. And I can understand. I mean, he does a really good job of evoking that kind of feeling of helplessness and fear. So to that extent, like the same reason you might want to watch a scary movie, I can understand why you'd want to read Kafka. And I think there is a place for everything. I mean, I obviously would never give Kafka to like a 10-year-old and say, here you go, kid, this is what life's all about. but, I mean, you know, that's something that you read when you get older, just as, like, you know, hopefully when you get older, it's when you get older that you start experiencing slasher films, but as it happens most of the time, it's 12-year-olds who are fascinated with that kind of thing. But it's something that... I just want to be so careful as to not make it sound like that we're curmudgeon-y old men who are like, oh, in my day, stuff was better. And I also don't want to turn it into a, you know what we need? We need a government body to go in there and change television so that it all promotes some kind of social agenda. I don't want that either. It's more like just kind of – I'd like to couch it in the sense of, like, this is what we kind of gravitate towards, and that's why we do what we do. This is what value we got out of it. And take it or leave it, as the expression goes.
Yeah. I personally, I like to sort of idolize the characters that I like. And I like characters, you know, for, you know, as we were talking about earlier, I like characters for much deeper reasons than, oh, he's dumb. You know, I like to get more out of a show than just a chuckle. You know, I like to identify with the characters more than that. Some shows are just good and silly and fun, and that's fine. But they tend to not be as important to me as shows that feature, you know, ideals and things that I can look up to. Like, you know, Jack Webb's role of Sergeant Friday on Dragnet is fantastic. I could watch that guy in episode after episode and a half. I really like that character. I really like what he does, and I think there's a lot to look at in that character and sort of, you know, pattern your own life in a similar way to where you can sort of, you know, take the good aspects of that character and make them be part of you as much as you can. And, you know, that's just one show. You know, you can even do that with Transformers. I mean, there are so many good qualities of a lot of those characters, even the quote-unquote villainous characters, you know, had very admirable qualities in a lot of respects. So,
right.
I mean...
This is something that, again, like that we talked about with Sean on some previous podcasts, is this sense that they're a jumping-off point. That's, like, part of the magic of those kinds of cartoons, is they're not throwaway storytelling, because they're this wonderful starting point to engage your mind in the act of, let's face it, value decision is higher brain functioning, because you're holding things against each other and saying, what do I like better, this or this? And whether or not you're asking yourself out loud why you like this one better, you're still making that judgment.
Yeah.
Right? And even if you can't say exactly why, you know why. And so this is all encouraging, like, very higher brain function stuff, like really, like powerful character building stuff, just by inviting a child, or an adult for that matter, to role play, to analyze and assimilate what they like about this character versus that character. Why do I react negatively to this character and positively to that character? And it can be a good guy, but it can even be a bad guy, because as we both know, one of your favorite characters of all time, and I think this comes more from the comics, is Cobra Commander, right?
Yeah.
And why do you like Cobra Commander? Do you really want to rule the world and push people around and make people miserable? Do you really want to do
totally.
That?
Totally.
Do you remember that episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 where they talk about what they want for Christmas and Crow, the robot, says, I want to decide who lives and who dies.
No, but even an evil character has very admirable qualities. Cobra Commander is very intelligent. He has a huge vocabulary.
In the comics.
You know, yeah. And he knows how to get what he wants. You know, he basically is a self-made man. He put together an entire army, following one guy. You know, it's like, how often do you hear about that? And when you do, it's usually in a negative connotation. But still, I mean, just look at that alone and forget the fact that he's out for power. And you're like, wow, what charisma. I wish I had half that charisma. And so even in the villainous characters, there's usually something to glom onto. And most of the time, especially in the entertainment from the 80s and whatnot, the villainous characters were so over the top and just sort of flashier.
Well, we were talking about this before. You and I have talked about this many times, and I talked about this again with Sean Robert, was there's a sense with certain villains of a sense of self-assurance and a sense of ownership of oneself.
Yeah.
The villains rarely question what they're doing. I think
exactly.
That the issue of G.I. Joe where Cobra Commander puts all of his enemies in that, like, oil tanker or whatever,
yes.
And, like, blows up a mountain on top of them, and then, like you see some other guy says, like, oh, my God, were there people in that boat? And Cobra Commander walks up, and he says, there certainly were people in that boat. All traitors, backstabbers, and sycophants who had the utter gall to do me dirt, let them cease to exist, and he blows the darn thing up.
Exactly. Part of it, you know, it's just a power fantasy where we wish we had that much power in life to do these things that, you know, that the reality of daily life and politeness and whatnot, you know, prevents us from doing. But, you know, everybody, you know, wants to do that to their boss or, you know, someone in their life. So we can identify with that.
Not that we, like, literally fantasize about, like,
no.
Doing somebody harm, but it's more or less of having that sense of, like, what those characters fulfill is they fulfill that wish fulfillment of having
yes.
That sense of
wish
self-assurance. That self-assurance and that self, that posture. Like, okay, you compare, say, the way Cobra Commander was written in the comics versus the way Optimus Prime was written in the comics, especially by Simon Furman. I love Simon Furman's writing, but one of the chief kind of itches I get whenever I'm reading his stuff is that Optimus is always going, oh, gee, am I doing the right thing? Boy, I hope nobody gets mad at me when I make this decision because, oh, it's so tough being the leader. He just came across as almost whiny. And the villains, they have the advantage of being able to act without scruples. Starscream.
Mm-hmm.
Every time Megatron falls down on the ground, I'm in charge. You know, he just takes over. So we talked about that. It was like the sense that Starscream was a compelling character because he knew he would be the best leader, and he wanted everybody else to know it. You know, there was no question in his mind. He didn't go, oh, gee, you know, are people going to be mad at me if I do this? No, he just did it.
It was just all confidence and all bravado.
So maybe his methods weren't something to admire, but what drove those methods was something to admire in a weird way, you know. And that can maybe send a mixed message to kids, but I think for the most part, most kids – can understand the difference. And I bet if you did a sociological study and you interview criminals, they're not going to say, gee, you know, when I started stealing cars, it was all because of Starscream. It came from there. I woke up one morning and realized that I shouldn't ask, I should just take, like Starscream, and that's why I took that car. I think there's probably a little bit more complex problems going on in that guy's life than Transformers telling him to go take things that he wants, you know. But you know, I think that when you're dealing, the reason that this is so important in children's entertainment is because you're at that age where you're really shaping who the heck you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are who you were when you're 11 or 7 or whatever it is. So cartoons are wonderful because they can present this arena for the kids to role play within, and then you get to do those conversations you have on the playground. We say, "Oh, Merman's my favorite because he talks weird and he's kind of weird looking." You know, Trapjaw's my favorite because he's green and he has a big jaw, right? And while it starts out as something as simple as, "Well, I like Grimlock, he's the dumb guy," it through the role playing, you, whether you are aware of it or not, you are doing an analysis of what makes these characters work, and by doing that and by evaluating it, by making value judgments on it, you're shaping who you eventually will become. So the more options we can present with young people, and the better options we can present with young people, the better ultimately our quote unquote culture will be, right? I mean, presumably.
I agree.
It sounds so big and important to say stuff like that when all we're really doing is making comic books that not even that many people read, you know? So, yes.
Well, if only one child is changed by something you've done, then you've done a good thing.
La, la.
I believe the children are future.
Oh, man. I was going to do that the one to grow on thing, but...
See, that's a whole other topic. You know, in the 80s, we had one to grow on where celebrities are telling us what to do. And now we have Inquirer where, you know, and other tabloid shows and whatnot where celebrities show us what not to do.
Well,
I just think there was like a better agent in the 80s.
Well, no, what I'm curious about is I wonder how much of that is due to how much media we have now versus...
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, because, like,
nothing is really hidden anymore. If you want to know what Britney Spears is doing right now, you could find out.
Right, right. And I'm thinking about how when we were kids, yeah, we did have One to Grow On. We did have, you know, what was that after-school thing that Captain Kangaroo used to host? The live action things, when it was always about like kids, like, you know, dealing with real life problems. And that and Soul Train were like the signal to go outside and play because you were done watching something entertaining. But where was I going? Oh, but at night, late at night, I remember there were things like the Morton Downey Jr. show, right? You remember that guy?
Yeah.
He'd smoke incessantly and just yell at people. There was plenty of garbage TV on really late at night, and you just stay up and watch the UHF station. You're going to find it, and you know, then again, there were kids who had cable in the 80s, and I didn't, but plenty of kids did. So I think part of this might have a lot to do with there's more available, because like when I'm watching TV, and I'll admit that I'm more sensitive than the average viewer. Like I can't take surgery shows. I just can't take the gore.
Me either.
I can't take shows that are too – that take themselves so seriously that, like, I feel like I'm supposed to be mentally shaken by the time I'm done watching it. I don't want – like Mark said in the previous podcast, I don't think you heard this one yet, but it was really funny. He summed it up for me perfectly. And this is just a personal taste thing. He said, he's like, the last thing I want to do when I've had a bad day at work is come home and watch somebody have a bad day at work. So this comes more from my sense of like liking escapism over other kinds of entertainment. And that said, you know, like Dragnet was a heavy show, and Perry Mason is a heavy show comparatively speaking. You know, hold that up to like Sunboat Animation. Yeah, they deal with some deep stuff sometimes. But like a lot of stuff that's on TV, like in prime time, I just can't take it. It's just it's either too personal or it's too. Graphic. And what I find is I'm like, oh, I can put on Disney Channel or Nickelodeon or TV Land, at least then there's something I can watch or something that I don't mind being on in the background. It's not going to like, I'm not going to look over my shoulder and go, oh my God, I wish I never saw that. So there is still stuff where, like, I don't think anybody would disagree with me that there's very little on Disney Channel, if anything, to offend somebody. It's Disney Channel for crying out loud, right?
Yeah.
So. And for the most part, I mean, a lot of, there's a lot of not so good stuff on there, but there's also some stuff where, you know, like you've probably never watched Kim Possible, but I honestly believe that is one of the finest written television cartoons made in the last probably 15 years. So, I think a lot. I think this is less about that was then and this is now, but more about that was three channels that had most of the entertainment, and now we've got a billion. And with YouTube, we've got even more, so you can watch that cat play piano, if that's really all you want out of your entertainment.
You know, soon we will have the cat playing piano channel on television, I'm sure.
Other people have made that joke better than me, where they say, like, it's a cat using the toilet while playing the piano and playing the Super Mario Brothers theme, you know?
Now that's entertainment.
Right. If somebody gets that to happen, then they've got their own TV show. That's all it would be, is just that. But there, we made our case. That was a nice epilogue to the whole all ages entertainment thing. I think you summed it up well, Hoof.
I think I put everybody to sleep with my dry, heavy-handed talking. But I just like to look up to people. I like to have heroes. I enjoy that. I like emulating other people, and they don't have to be real, because usually the qualities I'm emulating, you know, are there in a fictional character.
Well,
just as real as they are in a non-fictional character.
And the really fictional qualities you can't emulate. You cannot stick to walls. You know? you can't
I've tried and tried to emulate that, but I can't climb a building.
Well, you shouldn't try. You can't fly into outer space if you feel like it, you know?
I can't even transform. I can barely bend over to scratch my knee.
You can't turn into a DeLorean and travel backwards in time.
I really want to.
Okay, well, did you have any closing thoughts on this, or is that as far as you want to take this thing?
I think my closing thought is that, you know, I think Metroplex as a Transformer had lots of doors that could close. And when he said closing, I was just thinking of all Metroplex's off-ramps and on-ramps and them closing, and what if Bumblebee got trapped inside. And I think we should pontificate on this for the next hour and a half or so.
An hour of discussion of what would happen inside of Metroplex when he turns into robot mode. And when he's fighting Trypticon, and Trypticon punches him in the chest, and he falls down, what happens to all the Autobots inside?
Yeah.
That's got to hurt. Or does he have artificial gravity?
Oh,
so, like,
artificial gravity. The mind boggles.
If they have subspace weapons, then they've got artificial gravity inside of Metroplex.
Mm.
And by the way, trivia fact for everybody, Trypticon was played by the older brother from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah, Brad Garrett.
Who knew?
Who knew?
I knew that after doing that really deep role of Crush Metroplex, you go on to do some real acting.
Lord Raymond, I don't like that Mom likes you better.
You know, I've never watched that show, so I don't know anything about his role on there. It must have been good because he went off to do another sitcom, right? He's doing something else now. Where it's
yeah, like, I think he's on another show now.
And he's like, he's married and they're sad about it.
I think he actually plays Trypticon in the new show. Trypticon got married, and they live in a house, which is ironic because Trypticon turns into the house, I think is what happened.
Oh, and the tribulations of being married to a guy who just says Crush Metroplex over and over again.
Yeah, it's a heart-wrenching drama is what that one is.
What does Trypticon do when Trypticon's no longer needed?
Oh, man, it's a good thing you're married. Because there's no hope, no hope, no hope at all for me.
Oh, God. Okay, we got to stop because, yeah, I'm going to sprout Vulcan ears in a minute here if we don't knock this off. So, Hoof, thanks for being on the Supercast and just kind of winding things down with me before we get started with a really big launch. By the way, newsflash, folks, but if you are listening to this recording, odds are the Sugary Cereals Anthology proper has launched. which means that every day you're going to get a new page of the anthology. It starts on September 30th, which is the day after this podcast will be posted. And it will be, at least I think for the first 8 days, it'll be every day, including Saturdays and Sundays. So
a new page every day for free?
For free.
Wow.
I want them all. Do you remember that GoBots commercial for the hologram stickers? Where they did all the clips of the characters for the show where they were just like taking like one line from them to kind of like answer what the announcer was saying?
No, I do. I'd forgotten all about that one.
It shows Scooter for free. This, yes, for free. You get a sticker. And then it shows that bad doctor. He's like, I want them all. I got to look that up on YouTube later.
Oh.
So, yes, it's updating every day for free. And at the end of the month, it will be collected in a print volume, which you'll be able to buy at indieplanet.com. So the fun begins every day. Please visit the site early and often. And if you have any thoughts on it, let us know. You can go ahead and visit in the forum. You can comment on the actual pages themselves. It's essentially like a blog, so you can post there. Or you can even email us. My email address is Jersey, J-E-R-Z-Y, at SugaryCereals.com. And remember, cereals is spelled S-E-R-I-A-L-S. Hey, Hoove, where can they reach you?
Oh, they can reach me. They can just lean over and tap me on the shoulder. No, they can reach me at Hoovertron at AOL.com temporarily. You know, not for much longer, because AOL is going bye-bye.
Oh, but don't you get to keep your email address?
Probably, yeah. I think I will keep the email, so I guess they can always reach me there.
So if you can't
remember... Not that anyone wants to reach me, because I'm not married.
Everybody should. If you enjoyed his little moral pontification this episode, he's got more. Trust me, I've known him for 14 years. And that was just the tip of the iceberg of Hoover's rants. And in case you don't remember, it's Hoovertron, as in Megatron. Transformers nerd.
Oh, the nerddom. Nerd overload.
There's no such thing as a nerd overload right now, because nerds are cool. So let's ride this thing. We got to ride this wave out until jocks become cool again.
Oh, man. Yes, well. SugaryCereals.com, SugarySereals.com.
Well done.
It's .com.
Okay, well, thanks for listening, everybody. Hope we didn't bore you too much. And okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Head for sugary cereals and